You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. A retired corrections officer who previously ran for state office is vying now for a seat on the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners. Glenn Gaither is the second candidate to file for the District 5 seat currently held by Leanne Thompson. Thompson is not running for re-election, but Gaither will face an opponent in the May 19th primary. Rand Dufka, a contractor from Arch Cape, who Thompson encouraged to run. Gaither grew up in the Napa area and graduated from Napa High School. He served in the U.S. Marine Corps and then the Army. Much of his professional life has been as a corrections officer in Washington State. He retired because of medical issues and returned to Clatsop County in 2019. Gaither says if elected to the District 5 seat, his priorities include bringing in better-paying jobs and addressing issues like homelessness.
We need to find those jobs to replace the timber industry jobs that we've lost. And, you know, people can say, well, your unemployment rate, you know, is high, and it's really well, but it's like, okay, well, what is the underemployment rate? Because they're counting underemployed persons. They're counting part-time jobs. They're counting minimum wage jobs that are just not going to cut it. You know, if you're trying to support a family, so we need to reindustrialize some of our areas, clean up the tourist areas, and do everything we can to people here into the county. We need to grow.
Gaither says he is not necessarily running in opposition to anyone, either Thompson and her approach to the position or Dufka. He believes they all want roughly the same things. County commission seats are nonpartisan, but Gaither made a point of noting his affiliation with the Republican Party in his filing documents.
If I tell you that I'm a Republican, people are going to kind of know, well, these are going to be some of the ideologies that he supports. Not all, but some of the ideologies he supports and how his thought process is. You tell somebody a Democrat, they're going to think the same way about the other direction. Now, it's just a little bit more information up. It says, hey, this is who I am. This is the party I work with. And if you want to ask people how I am in the party, I go after Republicans far more than I go after Democrats.
In 2022 and 2024, Gaither ran unsuccessfully against then-Republican Cyrus Javidi for the House District 32 seat in the House Republican primary races. At the time, The Historian reported that Gaither had criticized Javidi's middle-of-the-road approach. Gaither advocated for harder-line positions on issues such as education, abortion, and public safety. Javidi has since switched to the Democratic Party, saying he no longer sees his values reflected in the Republican Party. Gaither said he was initially motivated to run for the House because of changes he saw in Oregon school districts around topics such as sexuality and race. He worked with the culturally conservative group, the Napa Parents Organization, which had challenged the Napa School District's curriculum and response to the COVID-19 pandemic. When he was running in 2024, Gaither downplayed the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. When asked about that now by KMUN, Gaither said,
we've had, four terrorist attacks in the last 2 weeks? Something to that effect. We've had riots in Portland that lasted 100 days straight every night. We have people still going to Portland. They're throwing things at ICE officers and committing felony crimes, but nobody condemns that. January 6th was an incident. It was not a good incident. It was not intentionally set up to turn out that way. People got out of control. You know, that's human nature. But as far as like some of the hyperbole around it, like, oh, four officers died, da da da, and like that didn't happen. No officer died as a direct result of anything that happened on January 6th. There were other natural causes of death. And I don't know if that's just coincidental or if the stress, you know, at that point could have caused somebody to have a heart attack. That's hard to think. So, but nobody was directly assaulted or killed during January 6th. One person died that was Ashley Babbitt, the Air Force veteran that got shot in the back of the neck.
Candidate filing is now closed. Ballots for the May primary will begin to go out in the mail at the end of April and beginning of May. Congress is considering a bill that would effectively ban mail-in voting in states like Oregon and add new ID requirements that experts say could make it far harder to register to vote. In a call with reporters Tuesday, Oregon Democratic Senator Jeff Merkley said he anticipated the bill, if passed, could disenfranchise millions of women who changed their names when they got married, including his wife. It would allow the government to disenroll voters that have names that don't match their birth certificates.
Some certainly will re-register, but many of them will end up being decertified from voting. That's a huge assault on a basic right of every citizen.
Merkley said if the bill passed before the May election, it would be very difficult for Oregon to comply. Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reed has also criticized the bill, saying Oregon elections are secure and the bill is, quote, a terrible solution in search of a problem. For the second time this week, the Justice Department is challenging an order from a judge in Oregon that limits when federal officers can use crowd control weapons outside the Portland ICE facility, a site of frequent protests. Oregon Public Broadcasting's Conrad Wilson reports.
On Monday, the Trump administration appealed an order from U.S. District Court Judge Amy Baggio that restricts tear gas and chemical munitions. Baggio's preliminary injunction sided with residents of an apartment complex across the street from the Portland ICE building, who sued, arguing the tear gas fired by federal officers seeped into their homes, violating their constitutional rights. The very next day, Justice Department attorneys appealed another decision, this one by U.S. District Court Judge Michael Simon, who found Department of Homeland Security officers had an unwritten policy to use excessive force on nonviolent protesters, in part to chill their free speech rights. Like Baggio, Simon's order also restricts officers' use of crowd control weapons. The cases now go to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I'm Conrad Wilson in Portland.
A new report from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine looks at offshore wind on the West Coast and helps prepare federal agencies for the future. Jefferson Public Radio's Roman Battaglia reports.
The report was ordered by Congress in 2023 and focuses on a few key areas, including a review of the government's leasing process. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management had planned to auction off parts of the ocean for wind farms off the southern Oregon coast in 2024, but the auction was called off when most of the developers backed out. Keith Michel was a co-chair of the committee behind the report. He says that BOEM has had a difficult time building trust with the community.
Organizations like the Coast Guard and NOAA have constant contact with the local communities, so they develop a sense of trust over time.
Michel says that BOEM should work with these other agencies that have a better track record. He says the agency needs to do more open houses and respond more meaningfully to input from the public. I'm Roman Battaglia reporting.
Oregonians are paying the fifth highest gas prices in the nation this week, according to AAA. The average for regular is $4.48 per gallon, up 80 cents from a month ago. Kyra Buckley reports.
The price of gasoline is closely tied to the price of crude oil, a global commodity that's been deeply affected by the war in Iran. Oil is in fertilizer, jet fuel, plastic, and of course, gasoline. It travels by train, pipeline, and ship. And currently, a chunk of the world's oil is cut off from its regular trade route due to the war. That pushes up demand, and therefore price, for the remaining available oil supply. And that's raising gas prices across the U.S. Oregon tends to have higher gas prices due to taxes and a lack of refineries that turn oil into gasoline. Energy economists predict rising gas prices will translate into higher prices for groceries, clothes, and other items in the coming weeks and months. I'm Kyra Buckley reporting.
In Tillamook County, Bay City leaders have approved increases to the city's water rates. This month, the city council voted unanimously to increase the base rate inside the city for 3/4-inch pipe from $45 for 3,000 gallons to $46.31. The base rate for users outside of the city will go up by nearly $2. These more moderate increases come a year after the city made much more substantial increases to the rates. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at TillamookHeadlightHerald.com. This is local and regional news on KMUN. The replacement of the interstate bridge between Washington and Oregon has a new price tag. As OPB's Eric Newman reports, the full project is now expected to cost 140% more than the last estimate.
The cost to build a new interstate bridge has gone up from a past estimate of about $6 billion to $14.4 billion along the project's full 5-mile corridor. Washington State Governor Bob Ferguson was in Vancouver on Tuesday. Surrounded by local lawmakers, transit officials, and labor leaders, he said the project would get done.
I'm not interested in looking backwards, okay? We're building this damn bridge. That's happening, okay?
Going forward, officials will focus on the core elements of the project, replacing the bridge spans, connecting them to I-5, and extending light rail from North Portland to downtown Vancouver. Those parts are expected to cost about $7.5 billion. Ferguson said the remaining portions of the project will be completed in phases as funding becomes available. I'm Eric Newman reporting.
Going into the just-concluded legislative session, Washington state lawmakers had the Trump administration on their minds. State government reporter Sarah Mises-Tan reports Governor Bob Ferguson has begun signing legislation meant to counter federal actions.
He's already signed a bill that requires insurers to cover vaccines recommended by the state. That was one of the big measures passed that lawmakers point to as a response to the Trump administration. Other measures responding to Trump that Ferguson has signed or will be signing in the next coming weeks: he's barring law enforcement officers from wearing masks. He's protecting the privacy of people who've changed their sex designation for their ID. He's limiting inspections of worker records by immigration agents, and a number of bills to protect voter data.
The budget awaiting Ferguson's signature includes tens of millions of dollars in new state spending on food assistance and health care after Congress made cuts. A man is suing the Port of Ilwaco in Pacific County, Washington, claiming he slipped on an icy dock last year. According to filings at the Pacific County Superior Court, a patch of ice extended from one side of the dock to the other and was the result of a leaking water faucet that the port had not fixed. Gerald Cutting owned a boat docked at the Port of Ilwaco's marina and was walking along Dock M last January when he slipped. He claims he sustained serious injuries from the fall. The Cuttings do not specify the amount in damages that they are seeking. The Chinook Observer reached out to the port for comment, but the port declined to comment on ongoing litigation. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Department. You can find links to other stories from our news partners at kmun.org/news. There you'll also find reporting by KMUN. That's all from us today, but stay tuned. American Democracy Minute is up next. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The Florida legislature passed HB 991 March 12th, a state version of the federal Save America Act, now before the U.S. Senate. Governor Ron DeSantis is likely to sign the bill, requiring, among several voting restrictions, having proof of citizenship on file for every Florida voter. It's likely to disenfranchise thousands. The bill also further narrows acceptable IDs for voting, including eliminating student IDs as an option. Almost a million students attend Florida colleges. The Florida Phoenix reports that every Florida voter's citizenship status, new or existing, will now be run through Florida's DMV records prior to approval. If no citizenship documents are on file, voters must provide proof, including a Real ID compliant driver's license, a U.S. birth certificate or passport, a naturalization certificate or alien registration number, a current federal ID, a state-issued ID, which includes a citizenship designation, or a court order granting citizenship. During debate on the bill, the sponsor said over 872,000 Floridians don't have a Real ID compliant driver's license. In 2025, state officials referred 170 non-citizens on the voter rolls for investigation out of 13 million registered voters. We have the HB 991 text at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to KMUN.